You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Attention all theater lovers! This Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
To Theater Geeks Anonymous,
the podcast about Broadway flops, scandals, and new work.
Now we'll take a break from our usual episodes to bring you this intermission-sode.
This meeting is being recorded. And like she sounds like that. This meeting is being recorded. Like she's so over it. She's been quiet quitting for ages.
Okay. So quiet quitting.
What are your thoughts?
Well, I just saw, I'm not on TikTok, but a lot of people put TikToks on Instagram. And so this woman was breaking down. I mean, I saw it on Twitter and read an article. I don't remember what magazine it was from, that was explaining what quiet quitting is. And I was like, oh, so it's just people doing.
It's just doing their job.
Yeah, they're just doing their job instead of staying until some ungodly hour and having no life. That's basically what it is. And then there's this woman that I follow who posted a TikTok where this woman's like, she's deeply explaining why the term is problematic. But also, like, again, it's just people doing their job.
What they are paid for and not anything else.
Right. Which is what I have been doing for forever. I'm not quitting my job. Like, I just started this one. It's just like I'm supposed to work from 9 to 6.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to be working until 8 and 10 and waking up at 4 o'clock in the morning and answering emails. Yeah. I will answer it at 9 when I come in. Thank you.
The thing is, we as millennials, as elder millennials, you and I, were sold this package of a meritocracy.
Yeah.
That if you just worked hard enough, that all your dreams would come true.
Right.
And I think that perhaps that was true for boomers and Generation X.
Right.
But not so much for us, because by the time we got there, all the resources were gone and there was nothing left for us because of recessions, because of inflation, because of fill in the blank reason.
Right.
We were still, you know, asked more than what we should have been asked of. If that was a good sentence, I don't even know.
We all knew what you meant. It's okay.
You should. Listen, I didn't go to college. I don't care what my grammar sounds like, as long as you understand the context. But we were all sold this bill of goods that ends up being absolute manipulation on the part of capitalism and the people that have all of the money and all of the power.
Yeah. It needs a new term because it's not quitting. No, none of these people are quitting their job.
No. They're all just doing what they have been hired to do.
Right.
So they're actually very good workers because they're doing what they were paid to do.
That's right.
It's interesting, though, because there is this kind of parallel from work to relationships in as much as this quiet quitting terminology comes into play.
Right.
Mm-hmm. For a long time, there's this idea that women and men have different ideas of what the workload should be, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And if a woman is doing more of the emotional labor and more of the physical labor than the man is in a relationship, that over time, they will just peel themselves away from it.
Mm-hmm.
And so the really only evidence that the man sees that there's any issue is mm-hmm. at the very end when she's already divorced herself from you. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying legally divorced. I'm just saying right. she's already kind of said, nah, I'm not in this anymore.
Right.
She's already emotionally detached herself. She's already physically detaching herself. Mm-hmm. And the clue for you should have been all of the times that she asked you to put the cap back on the toothpaste and asked you to please take out the garbage and asked you to please do more than just doing the dishes. You have to also put them away.
Yeah.
All those times that you felt that she was nagging you. Ugh, it's maddening. This yeah. is why I like to live alone. This is why I'm just so happy being single, because all of those decisions fall on my shoulders. And if I choose not to do them, I'm the only one that I can be mad at.
Yeah. Or you can just pay somebody to do it.
And there you go. There you go. And then they can take responsibility. Right. And if I don't like the way they're doing it,
they're then fired.
Right. Or they can take the criticism and they can switch it up.
That's right.
Aye.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. I don't, but it's like with the work thing, it's interesting because I have been very, my staunchness about staying within my work hours also comes from like, I didn't move to New York City to do the day job. I moved to New York City to be a creator. Right. Mm-hmm. And so sure. I have to clock out at 6 in order to have time to do what I actually moved here for.
Yeah.
Because I love New York City, but it is like too expensive to not also be following my dreams.
Do you know the amount of times I've said to myself, I didn't move to New York City to be a nanny. I didn't move to New York City to be a dog groomer. Yeah. But I hear your words and I'm really just kind of processing them for myself right now. And like, you know, I didn't just move here to do that. Yeah. I moved here to do Broadway and I haven't exactly done anything to help myself out in that arena because I'm so tired or because I just don't have any, it really comes down to not having any more of myself to give at the end of the day for me.
Yeah. And I mean, you're one of the people in the city who's having to do, like, I at least only have to do one job to pay my bills.
Yeah.
You're one of the people who's doing multiple jobs to pay your bills and to have savings and everything.
Yeah.
And so
I also made the choice not to have any roommates. I made the choice to have a car. So, like, you know, there are other things that I put a priority on outside of it. Right. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
But I mean, but it's like, you know, I specifically said to myself, okay, if I'm going to do this day job, that's like doesn't really feed my soul. I'm very grateful for it. I have great, you know, supervisors. I have to be creating because I do get so extraordinarily depressed. It's very dark. It's very bad for my mental health. So, but it's just too expensive. I have to do that. Or what is the point?
Right.
For me.
Because you can be an administrative assistant anywhere.
Yeah.
Much like me, I could be a nanny anywhere. I could be a dog groomer anywhere.
Yeah.
There's only one place that has the creative resources that you and I crave and ultimately want to take advantage of.
Totally. I mean, this community... Like, I'm making a short film right now, but it's like the community to do that is all birthed out of theatrical experiences.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's, I know people make things their place, but I still have big dreams.
Sure.
And absolutely. So I'm like, I also feel like I have to explain myself less here. I was thinking about, you know, my family down south, I love them to pieces, but I often feel like they don't understand what is she doing. They're content enough that I have a steady job with health insurance and everything, right? They're content at least for that. So they don't ask too many questions because at least I've got that and that makes them feel okay. But they're still like, what is she? In their worldview, nobody 40 years old and single and doesn't want children and is like, you know, it's just like, and then when things that happen, you know, like Stephen Sondheim dying, and I can't even say why I need to go in my room and be left alone because I'm in the, they don't know why I'm devastated. They don't understand, you know, and like the same thing happened with she was,
right.
But they spent all my whole life, all I wanted to do was meet her. And then I felt such a sense of failure that she died before I was able to do that. And so it's like, I can't explain that. I just have to go to my room and have, you know, my moment to myself, you know? And so sometimes things happen when I'm gone and I love them to pieces, but then it'll be like a few days and I'm just like, I need to go home. I need to be home. When we're recording and like my aunties come in and they're like expecting me to hang out. I don't have a podcast. But we can all this way, which is literally next door. And they're, I warned you I was doing, okay.
Yep.
Oh, gracious sakes. It's just so interesting. And here, I'll just be like, tell my roommates I'm recording, like quiet.
Yeah.
Even though I'm like out here, I can't really hear what you're, but still, you know.
I say the same thing to my dogs. I'm like, okay, guys, listen. Ebony and I are going to be talking. You're going to hear my voice. It's going to be a little bit, but I still need you to be quiet. For the most part, they do really good. They're all just kind of spread out sleeping right now.
Well, we've got, this is going to be an intermission sode. Yep. You haven't sung your little intermission sode intro in ages.
It was like, I don't know.
No, that's
like
right.
A jazz chord.
No, that's right. I mean, I don't know if the notes are different. I'm not a singer. I don't know.
Okay.
But that's exactly.
I'd have to take like one brief little moment to remember what it was supposed to sound like.
This on Sunday, August 28th.
Yes.
By the time it's posted, some of the things could have happened. Maybe some of them didn't. Some of the things we'll talk about were announced a while ago.
Mm-hmm.
So like, for example, like the first thing I kind of want to just do a follow-up from the last intermission sode about Paradise Square.
Yeah. Where it's like when stuff like this, like the stuff that happened with Rebecca and just, then there was another article and then there was another article. Yeah. It's like, it's the gift that keeps on giving. I wouldn't necessarily want this gift. It's maybe a white elephant. It's a white elephant gift. But Garth, okay. So Garth Drabinski.
Right.
As well as, I guess it's not him directly. It's Paradise Square as a
LLC.
Company.
Right. LLC. It's the LLC. Mm-hmm.
Are being sued again.
Yeah.
By now choreographer and stage director.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit more about this because I've got my own thoughts, but you'll tell us the facts first.
I mean, it's kind of, you know, it's sort of,
it's similar to what is happening with Actors Equity. It's
because all of it's basically complaint of not being paid.
Yeah.
And so Garth is not on the LLC. He's not responsible for any, even though he is listed as the lead producer of board, or at least like not make it suspicious, or, you know, also I think keep any investors feeling more confident.
Right.
And, you know, from the articles I've read, it sounds like, you know, and from being able to have the advantage of speaking to people involved with the show, I think that it's not as much fraud this time as it is just like most shows have this hope that, you know, that a Beetlejuice, if you all remember before COVID, Beetlejuice, when it opened, was losing money, like really not doing well at all.
Right.
And it did something that Broadway shows hardly ever do, right? This is unprecedented how it just sort of ended up skyrocketing. And then it was like, you couldn't get a ticket. And that was several months into the run. But it's also the thing that like all producers hope and pray will happen if their show opens.
Right.
And starts out not doing well. You know, it's like
if
also
you just keep it open long enough, then yeah. hopefully it'll recoup and then it'll start making money on what it's lost already.
Right. I mean, some people are like that with movies too. I mm-hmm. mean, The Greatest Showman was another one yes. where like opening weekend, it did not do very well, but it was word of mouth. And then it became this like mega hit.
Yeah.
But well into it being available for people to go see in the theaters. And right. so, you know, I don't begrudge anybody for hoping
no,
anything.
But here's the difference between yeah. Paradise Square and all of those other shows that were mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
All of their people kept getting paid even when they were not making money on it.
Right.
And they didn't just stop payment until they started getting returns again.
And then in the New York Times article, so there's a New York Times article that was written by, I'm going to give Mark Tracy. And in that one, he does give a quote from Garth Drabinsky talking about the bond, mm-hmm. which they you have to pay to right. the union in order to like start the show. And it also is like, if you lose money, people still get paid.
Right.
So there was like a $450,000 bond. But when you go to the Hollywood Reporter article, it really breaks down the financials and where things were spent.
Right.
And so it seems to me that like maybe the bond is not enough to cover anymore because it had to be used for other.
Well, in the Hollywood Reporter article, mm-hmm. it does the actual lawyers of the LLC are saying yeah. that the bond is only going to be able to cover certain amounts.
Right.
So it's not enough to cover no. all of that stuff. And I right. guess that's where we kind of get into maybe there's some legal issue here because right. certainly you'd think that if you didn't have enough of a bond to cover a certain amount that until you did run out, you could keep it open. But then after right. a certain point, you're done. Right?
Right. No, that makes
sense. Unless you had right. a guarantor, someone that right. was going to, you know what I mean? And that's, you know, that's will be the case for a lot of these shows that aren't doing well. Spider-Man is the big one, right? They had Sony
most
behind
expensive.
Them. It was a multi-billion dollar company backing them. Yeah. So even though they were floundering,
yeah.
they had this corporation that was able to cover all of these expenses.
Yeah.
Does Paradise Square have anything similar?
No.
So it's really just singular people that yeah. had invested in it.
It's very traditional
yeah.
and on the back end. So, you know, I mean, from what I've heard, again, from people I know involved with the show, that the articles are, of course, like sensationalizing Garth's
yeah.
role and if it's fraud and stuff like that. And also, it sounds like they did get paid from the bond.
Okay.
But I, again, like having looked at the Hollywood Reporter piece, there's like back pay, including, you know, even though you get paid like as a creative mm-hmm. On the front end, then there are like residuals you're supposed to
right.
make after that. And so because they were losing money, they didn't pay out all of that.
Right.
So that's where the designers and you stage managers and directors and stuff are coming in now and saying like, well, we were still open this many weeks, so we're still owed this much
right.
money. And that's what you haven't paid. So
right. This is something else that, because I had asked you earlier whether or not
yeah.
you felt that it was fraud. My vibe is that it's not necessarily
yeah.
fraud. It was just not good planning.
Yeah.
In the worst way. But yeah. I guess my other question is, do you think that having Garth Drabinsky attached to it made it as not as successful as it could have been if it were free and clear of him?
That's possible.
Because it is, by all accounts, a really beautiful show and a powerful
yeah.
show.
I mean, also,
timing was on its side.
Right. I mean, they're saying COVID had something to do with it, which is, I'm sure COVID
sure.
did.
No,
you know, it's like you weren't getting nobody was
yeah.
getting the amount of crowds that
right.
they were getting, you
correct.
Know, before COVID. Right. So, of course, that's a factor. But speaking as someone who went to see the show, like, I didn't know what it was about. And that's a major problem with Broadway. Like, you know, I've mentioned this several times about my CTI class, but we had like a whole session where, you know, we with somebody in the industry who, you know, said that they had done these studies that showed what people actually want from the information that's mailed to them is what is the thing about?
Right. Give me a synopsis.
Right. And instead of that, they tell you like who's in it or who wrote it or and the Broadway, dancing or something, which is like,
that's what kills
that's
me.
That's nice. But like, what the heck's the show about?
Yeah.
That's what a lot of people, it's like Pamela always says, a good story is a good story is a good story. Mm-hmm. But if you don't even know the story,
right,
then it's like, what am I seeing?
Right.
Like, how the do I even is, figure it out?
The difference between movies and Broadway shows is that movies, if I said, hey, I'm going to go see that new, and forgive me, I'm coming up with a blank, Keanu Reeves movie.
Yeah.
Because I love him. He's so sweet. Anyway, I'm going to go see that new Keanu movie. You want to come with me? Oh, what is it about? I don't know, but Keanu's in it, right?
Yeah.
Broadway, you don't say, hey, I'm going to go see that new Beanie Feldstein musical. Do you want to go with me? Oh, yeah. What's it about? Oh, I don't know, but Beanie's in it. You don't say that.
No, because that's tickets more than a movie ticket.
Yes.
And, you know.
Well, and also because
it's two and a half hours.
Yes. When I was a kid and I would go into the music store and I would look through all of the CDs and cassette tapes of the Broadway musicals that they had, which was a very small amount because it was Central Illinois.
Right.
I would go to the back of the CD and I would read the synopsis.
Yeah.
And if I liked the story, I would buy the CD. Mm-hmm. And if I didn't really care either way, I might still buy it, but I also might leave it for next time.
Yeah.
And I found a lot of great soundtracks that way.
Yeah.
Because they gave me the information that I needed to make a good choice. Mm-hmm. You cannot tell anything from the title of a Broadway show. Case in point, Parade.
Yeah.
What do we think Parade is about?
I know.
It
about
is not
a parade.
Exactly. It's not what you think it is. It is not a nice light and airy show. It is dark.
100% no.
It is. And it's also like, if I hadn't known that that was a true story before I started listening to it, then I never would have like fallen down the rabbit hole of Leo Frank's stuff and like, you know, finding out all of the stuff about the true crime aspect of it.
Yeah.
Like that is interesting. Mm-hmm. That kind of stuff is what compels theater lovers.
Yeah.
To go and see the shows that are available to us.
And I also think, like, to your point, you didn't know what the show was. And so I think that also would lure, like, tourists or other people who don't know what the show's about. Like, now they're, okay, here's a way to figure it out. Because it's not, like, at least even with movies, even if you're, like, I'm a person who I'm not going to go see something unless I saw the trailer.
Right.
Right. And so like, at least with movies, you have like a 1 or 2 or 3 minute trailer so you can like see what the thing is about.
Yeah.
But you don't really have, you don't have that with Broadway shows. No. So it's just.
Not unless you're already at the theater and then you see like, you know, the B-roll leading up to it. Some of the musical numbers, sometimes they've got some of the stage stuff going on for plays.
But that's when you've already bought the ticket and you're in the lobby.
You're already waiting to see it.
Yeah.
And I've said this before, you know, like there is a risk to going to see a Broadway musical. So if you're coming from out of town, you're a family of four, you've already spent the money to get into New York City and then to pay and stay in New York City. And that is a huge amount of money right off the bat.
Right.
So if you have already decided we are going to go see a Broadway show, you're going to buy 4 tickets, but you're going to buy 4 tickets for a show that you know is a good bet.
Right. Right. Mm-hmm. It's true.
There's a huge risk. You know, like I don't want to spend even the cheap tickets. I don't want to spend $80 on a show that I'm not sure about or that I'm not going to enjoy or that I leave going, oh, I regret spending that money.
Yeah.
I could have bought groceries this week.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like that's a huge risk. If I'm going to Orlando and I know that I'm going to be going to Disney World, I know that the cost of that ticket is going to be worth it because there's going to be plenty, even if not all of it is my cup of tea, there is going to be plenty for me to see and do. And I will feel like the cost of that ticket was worth it. But you just don't know unless they tell you what the show is about on Broadway.
Right. I absolutely agree. I'm curious if any, you know, if there were any polls, I'd never looked this up about when I think about a show like Hadestown, that is a new work, but all like Anais already had an album, you know, which was based on, of course, the story is also this piece of Greek mythology that like a lot of people know as well. So I guess technically it's kind of like a recognizable commodity, but like not everybody knows that piece of Greek mythology.
Sure.
But you did already at least have this album that if you didn't know anything, you could go to her album, which was on Spotify, and you could just listen and you could get an idea of what you were getting into. Excuse me. Oh, I had another piece of musical theater in my head. Oh, Hamilton. With Hamilton, you had Lynn being at the White House, you know, which went viral. So you at least could hear the opening song 5,000 times before you went and, you know, you paid the money to like go see the show.
Yes.
So everybody, and then he had another bit on like Playbill when they had done another workshop at Lincoln Center. So you had something to kind of inform you. And then obviously everyone knew it was based on this Ron Chernow book. So if it's not like Paradise Square, as far as I know, like isn't based on like a one book, right? It's like, it's a historical story that not a lot of people know. And several people I spoke to who either did go see the show or like didn't go see the show and saw Joaquina's performance on the Tony Award. Awesome. They were like, I didn't see anything to even know the show was there.
Yeah.
Like some of them, it was that bad where it wasn't even, I don't know what this is about, but like, I didn't even see anything to tell me that this was on Broadway.
Right.
I specifically knew because I knew somebody in it.
Yes. Here's another issue at hand. Let's just look at Hadestown and Paradise Square.
Yeah.
Hadestown, and they're both relatively on the same level as far as like what you would see from the outside looking in if you were not a theater goer normally, right? It's not, yes, Hadestown, you understand that that might be like a Greek-related tragedy kind of thing. Paradise Square, you're not really sure from the title, but they're both kind of unknown, unknown commodities.
Right.
The difference being Hadestown, the cast and crew were so much smaller.
Yeah.
Paradise Square had 36 people.
Well, it was, I thought it was 40.
It might be.
Yeah.
But they had an astronomical amount of people on that stage that they had to pay every single week.
Yeah.
And those equity minimums are not low.
No.
So, and that doesn't even include the backstage. It doesn't include choreographer, stage director, obviously. Right. It doesn't include ushers, any of that stuff. None of that stuff is included. I'm just looking at what you see when they are on the stage.
Right.
So it is a much more challenging to keep a show up and running for a longer amount of time when you've got so many more people to pay.
Right.
The same thing happened with Sweet Smell of Success. I know for sure, in my own little heart and brain, that if they had had less people involved in the production of that show, that it would have lasted longer than the Tony Awards. There were just too many people because it hadn't found its niche yet, but it would have. It had the potential. And I believe the same thing about Paradise Square.
Yeah.
Because it was just starting to. I mean, the Tonys loved them.
Yeah.
So I think if they could have stayed, if they could have just been a little more lasting and also not been tainted by a person that had already been in prison for fraud in a musical, then, you know, I don't know. I mean, I don't know that that's certain, but I feel like it is.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's tough.
It is.
But also Hadestown did have Rachel Chafkin and she had just had innumerable success with
Great Comet of 1812. Yeah.
What's the name?
I said the Great Comet of 1812.
No, but what's the name before that?
Warren Peets?
Pierre.
Oh, Natasha Pierre. And the Great Comet of 1812. Yeah.
I got caught because I knew that the second part of it was the Great Comet, but it was like Natasha Pierre. That's what it is. Okay. Anywho. And that was, and it's also like, it's just like, it's just offbeat enough to catch the attention of theater goers who are getting a little bit bored of what the norm is.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's going on tour. I believe that's still happening. So I'm glad it's not over.
Yeah.
But I'm sorry folks won't get to see Joaquina because I can't.
Well, she's not going anywhere. You won't be able to see her in that square.
Right, because that,
it's iconic. I mean, I think that will be, so when 20 years from now, when they're playing back all of their favorite Tony Award, ceremony performances, Jennifer Holliday will always be one of them.
Of course.
And now Joaquina will always be one of them. there are just a number of them that are just burned into your brain. Mm-hmm. And like, those are the ones you just will go back to over and over again.
Yeah. That was her performance. And then like the little like cherry on top of that sundae was like when she won and Cynthia and Danielle were there and like the memes and gifs after of just like Black people loving to watch like that piece of like, they're just weeping on stage giving her, it's the sweetest, best thing. And so, you know, the, like all of that was just wonderful. So I'm sorry for all these problems.
Well, totally. Mm-hmm. Totally. And I mean, as much as you like want to look from the outside and be like, told you so, it's really, I mean, it's just, it's an awful situation all around because it affected so many more people than just the LLC and Garth Drabinsky.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. Well, if you all also want to read the Hollywood Reporter article, it's August 1st, 2022, and it's written by Caitlin Huston, H-U-S-T-O-N. And it, like I said, it gives much more detail on the exact financials of like the amounts and everything. And that's the one I had sent to for Pamela to read.
Because I couldn't read the New York Times one without getting a subscription.
So the next thing, which is also a follow-up from our last intermission, we'll hop to Funny Girl. I'm sure I mentioned this in the intermission where I had purchased tickets for my roommate's birthday to see Beanie.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Beanie decided she was leaving, you know, like very like to a week. Actually, it was like a week before we were meant to go was her last performance. So that stunk.
Did you get to see Julie Benko at least?
But she was amazing.
Yeah, that's
Julie
what I've heard.
Julie Benko was absolutely remarkable.
That's what I've from everybody on social media. Any all of my friends who have seen it are like, that is a star.
Yeah, 100%. 100%.
You could even say amazing. She's the greatest star.
I mean, really, she was absolutely wonderful.
That's great.
And so what's happened since all of that is Julie Benko, even after Lea Michele comes in, she has like one or two performances a week that have been given to her. So she'll always be playing.
Oh, good. Yeah, so is she now considered like the alternate?
Yeah, it's something like that. Because it's just like Lea will have these two performances off and Julie will just be doing it. And that's perfect. That's in her contract now.
Yeah, that's the greatest way to, because you can't just kind of like plop her back in the ensemble. And
right. Especially now that like every, like she's kind of blown up, like her social media has blown up. I mean, she's just, she is a star now in her own right. And that's I really love that now that we have this new Broadway star where we're not just putting in, you know, the same old people to fill, you know what I mean? Like not instead of having to pull from movies or TV or whatever, which I'm not, you know, knocking much,
but
the people who have pounded the pavement and put in the work to actually be theater actors and to see one of them like rise like this is just super fun. And she's really talented and wonderful. So we did. We got to see her. She was awesome.
Awesome.
And thank God we did, because it was like the next day Jane Lynch announced that she was leaving.
Yeah.
And I loved her so much in that part. So I can't, I do not understand any of the fodder, any of the anybody who is saying that like she's not good or what. I thought she was absolutely wonderful in the part.
Jane was a theater actress, wasn't she?
Yeah. I mean, this is not like she is very comfortable up there.
Yeah.
And I felt she was just like the most loving mother. Her voice is like, it's a character actress's singing voice, you know? So she's not belty, but she's like perfect. Like she was just wonderful.
That's nice.
And so I'm going to be one of those people who's like, I'm not going to hear anything bad about Jane Lynch because I don't understand what you're talking about because I saw her and I disagree. So that's how I feel.
Yeah.
But I'm so glad we went because literally she then decided.
Yeah.
She was leaving early.
Yeah, I wonder why she's leaving early. Do you have any conjecture about that?
I think there must be something to how Beanie and her were made to feel.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, with Beanie also, Beanie got COVID so many times, bless her heart, you know? And so it was like, if people are not making you feel wanted, plus you're just getting sick all the time.
Yeah.
You know, and I think stress adds to your body being able to fight off illnesses.
Yes.
You know, I really think like it was not only maybe her mental health, but also probably her physical health. And she was like, listen, I got to peace out, you know, and she's not hurting for work in TV and film. So like if theater is going to treat her this way, TV and film were happily have her, you know, and are having her, you know, so, theater is losing out. And so I feel, I don't know because I'm not friends with Jane. but I feel that was part of it. And, and Beanie and Jane seem to also have very rich personal lives. So it's like, why am I going to stay
in a toxic relationship?
Right. Right.
Yeah.
I have a loving home I can be in and go to. And so,
yes.
I'm sorry for those of you who miss Jane because she was just lovely and funny and great. Great. When she came up, because her entrance is like not a full entrance. is that right?
Did she just kind of come into the scene and start talking or?
Yes, that's how it is. Right. And so, I mean, the roar of the crowd and Julie also getting like just so much love, like the love.
That's great.
That audience was so happy.
Yeah.
They were happy and loved everyone.
Yeah.
I mean, Grimes, he got, oh my Lord, everybody just, they just loved the crap out of everybody and they were happy and they were cheering. Nice. And it was like, you know, and it wasn't a full audience, but man, it felt like it because their hearts were so big and so open to just support everybody.
Yeah.
It was beautiful. That was fun. That was a really fun performance to sit in.
That's awesome.
One of the things I also like briefly wanted to talk about was, okay, so there's been, you know, the first looks of Lea Michele is in rehearsals and stuff, but my favorite one was Playbill did a spoof Instagram post. Did you see that, Pamela?
No.
It was so funny. So there were legit first looks of like there's like this trailer kind of video. It doesn't have much of her singing, I don't think, but it's like you see her rehearsing the dancing and the singing and things like that. But before they released that, they had this Instagram post and it says the first chance you have to hear Lea Michele sing Fanny Brice. And so it's her picture and it looked like it's got the play button in front. So
does
many
it take
people
you to
clicked
the episode
on it.
Of Glee?
No.
Oh.
It's not actually a video. So they just tricked everyone with a play button to make them think that they could click on it and watch her sing. But it's just a picture with the play button on front. It's hilarious. And so there's all these people in the comments like, this moron clicked the thing thinking you all are really, you know, it's just the comments were funny. They were really funny. But yeah, I thought that was very clever. That like spoof.
I have a bit of conjecture.
Tell me.
And I don't know if it's true. This is just kind of like maybe the way that I think about theater right now is just, I almost think that they do things that are mean. As I was reading all of these articles that you sent in preparation for this intermission episode, it kind of occurred to me that sometimes Broadway or the producers will make decisions so that they can get more money or more butts in the seats or more views on social media, right?
Right. Yeah, yeah.
And so it made me wonder if they didn't hire her knowing that it was going to be this kind of like Leah Michele versus Beanie Feldstein from the beginning.
Right.
And then when ultimately Beanie was felt unwelcome enough to stay, then Leah would swoop in and steal the hearts of the theater goers. Like then it was even more social media presence, even more Twitter, even more, you know, butts in the seats to see, is Leah Michele going to do as good a job? You know, that kind of stuff. And it's uncharitable of me, but I kind of think it might be true.
Well, I'm not really going to play devil's advocate because I think there's something there, but my only, I guess, wrench in that is that also with those same comments about people feeling stupid for trying to click on the thing.
Yeah.
There was a lot of no thanks. Nope. Not interested. Lots of that because people are still, they are still have a difficult time with her because of how she had allegedly treated so many people she's worked with. Right. Yeah, yeah, right. Yeah.
But it's still keeping the name of the show in the forefront of everybody's mind. Mm-hmm. And so that's because like, if you consider that no publicity is bad publicity.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. If they, you know, and there have been plenty of other times in Hollywood history, certainly, where one actress has been pitted against another actress to get more tickets sold to that movie because people want to see what's going on with it, right? And then it turns out that they actually didn't have a feud at all. It was just the publicist saying, well, if you do have this kind of disagreement with her over Twitter, then it might get you, you know, that kind of publicity that you know, good or bad, that is going to get you to the top of people's minds.
I agree, because I mean, I don't know them, but like I don't think Beanie and Leah have any beef with each other.
No,
I just think that their talent has been pitted against each other, right? And so you know, their talent and their looks and everything that the patriarchy deems quote unquote worthy about women has been pitted against each other.
Yeah.
And has created this media and social media flurry, to your point.
Yeah.
In order to get butts in the seats and to, you know, and then Julie has been caught in the crosshairs, which I feel everybody knows.
Yeah.
And that's why there's such a strong sense of wanting to support her. I mean, people are buying tickets now just to see Julie to support her.
That's great.
You know?
Well, then also, I mean, like whether a ticket is purchased to support or to watch someone fail,
right?
Tickets are still sold.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. And so the producers still make money.
Absolutely.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I think, I mean, listen, I don't particularly care for Leah Michele. I don't like her actions. Haven't spoken very fondly of her. And, you know, and obviously I'm not in the room. I'm just seeing it on social media like everybody else is.
Right.
But when so many people are coming against her in social media that have been in the room with her, you have to kind of take it for what it is. Right.
Yeah.
So I'm not the biggest fan of her, but I also, she comes across as someone that is false. And I have dealt with people like that in real life. And there's something that turns me off from that. I can't trust them.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where I'm coming at with her. Like whenever I see her in interviews as Lea Michele, she doesn't read true to me. So I don't trust her.
Yeah.
It's a weird kind of thing. That's my own issue. I probably should speak to a therapist, but having said that, I think she's hella talented.
Yeah.
But I don't necessarily want to see her in it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I did recently watch the HBO Max Spring Awakening documentary.
I haven't yet. I really want to, though.
I guess I thought that there was going to be more of the performance, but it really ended up just being about Lea Michele and Jonathan Groff. And
oh, really?
This is where I have trouble. I love Jonathan Groff.
Hmm.
I feel like if he and I worked together, we would be friends, right? And I think that you're disagreeing, but, and that's cool.
No,
we can talk about that. Oh, okay.
I have mixed.
Well, the thing is,
like, his personality is not bad. I mean, if Lynn loves him, he's a great person. You know what I mean? I feel like Lynn's only tolerating the kindest people.
Yes.
I just feel like.
What are you thinking?
This is so controversial, but he's overrated.
Okay.
That's how I feel. I'm just like, he's fine. Why are we freaking out? Okay.
That's fair. Absolutely.
I think he's probably a very sweet person.
Well, and that's ultimately what I'm coming to. I love him. He seems like the big brother of my best friend growing up.
Yeah.
Like he seems like if I needed a hug, he would give it to me. If I needed to laugh, he would make me laugh. Like he seems very genuine to me. Except that he's got this friendship with Lea Michele and I don't trust her. And so now that's kind of coming off on him too.
I'm curious though, because again, I agree that like, he does seem like such a sweet, genuine human being. Right. And so that I think he knew her before anything.
Yeah.
And so before Hollywood and the industry, like she's a woman. And so like, my God, what she's probably had to endure. Right. And so she probably does have to put up this wall because even from what we're talking about, they're pitting Beanie and Lea's looks and talents against each other. Right. And so if that's been her experience, which I'm sure it has been. Right.
Oh yeah. Even from when she was 12 years old in Ragtime, I'm very certain of it.
Right. And so it's like, you do feel like you have to put up this wall to protect, especially if inside you're like a soft, gushy, like if you're a mochi, you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
And like, so on the inside, you're like gushy, like ice cream or whatever. You have to put up that like harder
protective
exterior
layer. Yeah.
Right. And so that's kind of what I think about her is like, that's happened to her. And, you know, her pain has caused her to inflict pain on others.
Sure.
But I think, you know, because he knows her so intimately, that's where their connection lies, because maybe that's one of the few people she can just be so herself with.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
you know, I always like, I say these judgmental things and then you like turn it around. You're like, let's see the good in people. And then I leave going, great. Now I'm not seeing the good in people. Buddy. Well, no, I mean, this is the perfect kind of collaboration. Yeah. This is the relationship that you want to have, right? Because you want to be called to the forefront for things that you're saying that might need to be challenged. And I do need to be challenged on certainly the way that I'm saying things. And perhaps my inner feelings as well. But no, you're right. I mean, I've said it too. There's a lot this child had gone through. I'm not going to share these details on air, but I have a story from someone who worked with her at one time when she was a child. Yeah. And the story he told me made me both horrified and heartbroken for her.
Yeah.
So I can almost guarantee that that's the case. There is also this idea, because she was a child actor, a child performer, that she didn't necessarily have a childhood at all.
Right.
She grew up probably learning, you know, going to school at Broadway school, you know, tutors and that kind of stuff. So she didn't have the socialization that she would have if she went to an actual school. Who knows? I don't know what her parents, her parental or family situation is about. I don't know if there's a support system that is there for her. So you're right. It very well could be that she has had to create this incredibly thick protective layer in order so that her mushy insides are not disturbed.
Yeah.
That is very fair. It doesn't excuse her.
Of course not. Yeah.
For the things that she has said and done in the past.
I agree.
And it also doesn't excuse the fact that the apology, quote unquote apology that she gave, was really not one at all.
Right. I agree.
But you're right. I mean, listen, we, all of us are full of scars inside and out that have shaped us, have molded us, and have pushed us forward into the next phase of our lives.
Yeah.
Sometimes those scars stunt us. And sometimes they empower us.
Yeah.
And support is a huge privilege that not everybody has.
Yeah.
Support being friendship, family, the people that you surround yourself with. It could be the amount of money that you have.
Yeah.
Like, all of that definitely plays a role in how you can move forward. But we, all of us, have potential to go in the right and the wrong direction at any given time. And I wish that I could, like, speak about the mental picture that I've got in my mind right now that looks slightly like a coronavirus. And if you are the center of that circle and all of the spike proteins coming off of it are different pathways to the next phase of your life.
Yeah.
Some of them are not great. Some of them are neutral. Some of them are fantastic. You just don't know really what you're going to take. Do you know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
I just put that together like that because it's like I'm in this, my mental picture. I've got it in my brain. I was like, how do I explain this? Because nothing is ever binary. Nothing in this world is binary.
Right.
Nothing is black and white. There are... we're one bad decision away from absolute disaster at any given moment in our life.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Now we're going down a really deep. I don't want to talk about that anymore. But it's, you know, it's a challenge. So I hear what you're saying. And she deserves grace just like any of God's other children deserve grace. And I'll just put a
Well, I wish everybody, you know, the best. It's a hard one.
It is hard. This is what we were put on this earth to do, is to simply love others, to create these connections with people, and to exist in a way that is respectful and loving of everybody around us and ourselves.
Yeah.
To be respectful and loving of ourselves as well.
Absolutely.
But it is also the most difficult thing to do. You can spend your entire life working at it.
So true. Well, I feel like, speaking of Jonathan Groff, that's a good segue. And this is very brief, but we covered Merrily We Roll Along, like, probably at the probably at the very beginning of the podcast.
Yeah.
And I love that show. I love the documentary, The Best Worst Thing That Could Have Ever Happened.
Yes.
And so I was really excited to see when New York Theater Workshop was going to do a off-Broadway revival of it starring Daniel Radcliffe.
Yes.
So now other casting's been announced. So he'll be playing alongside Jonathan Groff and Lindsay Mendez.
That sounds awesome to me.
Yeah. I'm very much looking forward.
Yeah.
I'm very much looking forward to it. And I because I've never been able to see a production, you know, I've just listened to the cast recording and watched the documentary 5,000 times and any reunion on YouTube. You know, that's all I've seen.
Yeah.
So I'm really looking forward to that. And I believe that's, let me just double check. I think that's spring 2023.
Okay.
Is what they're saying.
Side note, did you see that Daniel Radcliffe is playing Weird Al Yankovic in like a docu-movie?
Yes.
I love this so much.
I was like, I saw that and I said, for sure, never would have been on my bingo card.
Never.
100% never would have been on it.
Right up there with Murder Hornets. Like, it does not make sense, but it will be amazing.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, it'll be great. But like, this is not... I never thought Harry Potter was going to be Weird Al Yankovic. Not in a million billion years. I would have, if you would have bet me money, I would have lost everything. Because it would have been like, there's no way. That's never, who's going to do that? Nobody's going to cast it like that. That's never happening. It is bananas.
It is bananas.
I can't wait to watch it.
It's going to be amazing.
Yeah.
I used to listen to Weird Al when I was growing up. Listen. I had this cassette tape. Oh, totally. I had this cassette tape. Where Bad or the fat parody was on it, and there's a song called Mr. Frump's Iron Lung. I have no idea what it is a parody of, but it sounds like the first part of it sounds very like 50s, you know, teeny bopper kind of music, right? But the very end, it gave me nightmares, because at the very end of the song, we're singing about Mr. Frump in his iron lung. And all you hear at the end of the song is Mr. Frump like struggling to breathe and then nothing but silence.
That's dark.
It's very dark.
That's so
dark.
But
like the whole song up to that point is like, do-do-do-do-do-do-do, like that. Like, I can't even remember what it is. Let me see if I can find a little bit of a snippet.
Yeah, please do. I saw that and I don't remember who I sent it to. And I probably sent it to a couple of friends and I was like, this was not, I never in a million years would have thought this was going to happen. This is wild. So I think the problem is it's on like Roku, which I don't have. It's like on Roku channel. Uh-oh.
I think I saw that as well. Sorry, I muted myself because there's an ad playing on YouTube that I didn't want you to listen to until Mr. Frump said. Okay. This is what it sounds like.
It does. It's like a happy,
right.
And then
wait, let me get to the end now and we'll see if we can listen
dark.
To the stuff of my nightmares.
But in the hospital.
Right.
So he's probably on an oxygen mask.
Well, he's in an iron lung. Do you know what the iron lung is? So when people had polio, it essentially paralyzes everything. And so they would have these enormous contraptions that look basically like a huge metal cylinder that everything is covered except for your head. Like your head is sticking out, but you're like laying down. Mm-hmm. So your head is sticking out and they used to have like mirrors above you so that you could see what's going on around you. But like basically you couldn't move, you couldn't do anything. And this
sounds terrible.
Yeah. This iron lung was using like compression, air compression to make it so that you were opening and closing for you. Okay. So here's the end. Oh, there it is. Then nothing but silence. Like all you hear is like this clunky, like,
that's horrible.
And then nothing. It's horrible, like stuff of nightmares. But like, it's this really like, oh yay, happy go lucky song. Anyway, these are my childhood memories. How about you?
I mean,
oh, but yeah, like the iron lung was nothing. Like it was, that was why the polio pandemic was so awful.
Yeah.
And because it affected children mostly, you'd have these little tiny children stuck in these huge iron lungs and a lot of them just didn't make it out.
Yeah.
Awful.
Mm-hmm.
And that's now coming back. So
I know, I was just going to say,
I want to strangle people that think that this isn't a big deal, that not vaccinating your children is there's no consequence to that. Because we are seeing very real consequences now. Measles is back, which was almost eradicated. Polio is here in our wastewater in New York.
I know.
I know. This is I read that article and I was like, what? Is this the 1920s? No, 2022.
Yeah.
Polio is in the wastewater of New York City.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yep. I'm like, this is why I can't. This is so many. I love children, but this is why I don't. I'm like, I can't in good conscience have any. I can't bring them into this. I just can't do it.
No. They're better off. They're better off.
I'm like, I'm just going to be auntie to the ones that are here. That's what I can do. Yes. I can't make...
I can be a support system for all of the other
and
people
say,
out there.
I'm sorry. Yes. Auntie is sorry. This place is trash.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. And I'm doing what I can. But unfortunately, this is a group project. Mm-hmm. And a lot of my and group is...
We're all relying on the boomers.
Yeah.
Because they're still the ones in power at this point.
Uh-huh.
Ay, ay, ay.
But they don't care because they're leaving soon. So they're just burning it all down. Thanks for that.
Thanks. Well, but Ebony, God gave us this world in order to use it.
But we have to be good stewards.
Yeah.
That's the thing that really blows my mind.
Yeah.
Is that we have scripture that's so clear about when God gives you something. Mm-hmm. So why do we think we can't destroy things that he gives us? We're totally capable of destroying this planet because we've overused it because we've not been a good steward.
Yes. The thing is, and here's ultimately, this is what it comes down to, right? I'm renting an apartment. If I decide, I'm renting it. I can do whatever I want to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I leave it with walls being torn down and the flooring is completely destroyed and there's no other option but to completely gut it and rebuild. How is that responsible? I didn't leave it in good enough shape for the people who actually own it or for the people that will be taking over it after I leave my tenancy. That's what it boils down to. Because yes, you are all going to die sooner rather than later.
Yeah.
But there are still people that are being born now who are going to have to make up for your mistakes.
Like your grandchildren.
Right.
Your grandchildren who you're probably looking at.
Yeah.
What are you leaving them?
You're holding in your arms right now.
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to give them? You're going to give them a house from the 1970s that probably needs to be torn down anyway.
Mm-hmm. Lord have mercy.
It's so frustrating. I know. Brilliant. Lord help us. My, I can't remember. My brother told me that his theory, I guess, is that there's a lot of people that have this theory that heaven isn't necessarily this otherworldly place. It's not up in the clouds. It's not like a different plane of existence, that heaven will be this earth.
Yeah.
When the time comes, and that Jesus, God, will restore it to its former glory once the end days come.
Right. Yeah.
But it still doesn't give us free license to use it and throw it out.
Right. But yeah, I mean, I agree with your brother, and I'm not going to go deeper into theology. I'll have on top of that and this and this and this, but I agree with him.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm on a depressing. No. Okay. This is what we're going to end on because we also talked about Hadestown. We're going to talk about Hermes.
Yes. Oh, my gosh.
You tell it. You tell it.
Okay. So I saw this and I immediately sent this as a text to Ebony, even though I knew that she probably already knew. Lilias White will be doing a limited run as Hermes. And I cannot tell you the excitement I got when I read that because I freaking love Lilias White. She's going to make an amazing Hermes. And I almost want to go and see it again.
I know.
Just to see her.
Yeah.
And that's saying a lot because I don't like to leave my apartment.
I know.
But she's going to, oh my gosh, I just can't wait because it's like one of those roles that really doesn't necessarily have to be one or the other. It doesn't have to be black. It doesn't have to be white. It doesn't have to be male or female. It doesn't have to be anything. It can be whatever.
That's right.
And Andre put his mark on it.
He did.
In one certain way. Like, you couldn't take your eyes off of him. He was invested from the moment he entered that stage until the moment he left it. Mm-hmm. And he, even if he wasn't the focal point, like, he was there and he was giving all of his energy to the other people on stage. Right.
Yeah.
He's Andre DeShields. Like, he's just, he is an icon. Lilias White is like sun bright talent.
Yeah.
Behind is unmistakable.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I just love her. Even for a short a lot of projects going on. But yeah, it's going to be so thrilling to watch.
She will. And like, we'll put our own stamp on it. And
Oh, I lost you.
You can't hear me?
Oh, now I can.
Okay.
I heard you say she will put her own stamp on it.
Right. Yeah. She'll put our own stamp on it. And like, both of us were like, should we go back? We need to go back?
Yes.
Yeah.
The answer is yes.
Yes.
We should probably buy those tickets now.
Yeah.
So I'll let you get on that.
Okay. Well, we're going to end on that happy note.
Yes, that's friend. A good one.
And thank you so much for listening.
Yes. Thank you.
Bye.
And thank you also for understanding that our schedule is very intermittent of late. And that is just because both of our schedules have to work together in order to do these things. But we love you. We're always thinking about you. We're just not always on the air. So thank you for understanding. Have a fantastic day. We'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to our podcast, Theater Geeks Anonymous. You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at
TGABWay and on Facebook at Theater Geeks Anonymous.
Don't forget to Theater Geeks Anonymous podcast
on the Broadway Podcast Network and all your favorite podcast listening apps.
Your intermission-sode has now concluded.
Shut up, sit down, and turn off your cell phones. Tell Patti LuPone.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.
If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.